Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson. And today I have invited on the program author Lisa Farber-Silk, and we are going to be talking about her new book titled Giving My Heart, Love in a Military Family. Lisa has been a military wife and mom for almost 25 years. Her husband was attached to the 131st Combat Engineers of the Vermont Army National Guard, and her son is in the Air Force Military Police. Both of them have served in various parts of Iraq. Lisa has been involved in supporting the troops for many years, from pre-deployment preparation to post-deployment celebration. In 2007, she organized the Vermont Veterans Combat Stress Symposium, which brought in speakers from around the country to address issues affecting all veterans. In her new memoir, Giving My Heart, published by Loving Healing Press, Lisa details her struggle to get people to understand post-traumatic stress disorder and to find help for the loved ones in her life. And she just has a fantastic story and is really, really advocating all sorts of programs to help post-traumatic stress disorder victims, their families. And I'm just so happy to have Lisa on the phone today to talk about all of this. So welcome, Lisa, to Inside Scoop Live today.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. So, you know, I mentioned that you have been a military wife and a mom, and I just found out that your husband's father and grandfather were also in the military, so you've got quite a background in the military at this point.
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. And so your generation went through the Vietnam War and then now in the Iraq War. Is that how it's?
That's correct. I didn't know that much about Vietnam because what they taught us in high school was not very much because it was not a talked about subject.
Mm-hmm.
But my brother being 14 years older than I was, I know that my parents were very concerned about him having to go over there. So.
Mm-hmm. Had you heard about post-traumatic stress disorder before actually experiencing it firsthand?
Well, there has been a lot of talk about it. They had tried to prep the families about readjusting. When my husband was in Operation Desert Storm, they would give a debriefing when they were getting ready to come home. So even though they did talk about it, I don't think that they realized the magnitude of the problem coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell us about your new memoir, Giving My Heart. Get readers up to date on the story that you actually tell in this new book.
Well, the story is basically about, you know, my husband and my son and also a really good friend of ours for 20 years and him coming back from Iraq and having problems and trying to get help. And everything that I've done in the last year has been trying to make the American people understand that there is a major problem here and the stigma that the guys have in going into getting help.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think we're not hearing about this underlying problem, which is really, really, you know, at this point servicing as a major issue when of these guys coming back?
I'm not sure. I know there's a lot of stories out there because I listen to the news every night, and it's like you hear bits and pieces, and then you hear stories about service members killing themselves and suicide and going to the VA and not getting the help they need because they don't have bed space. I do know that up in Vermont, we're very blessed because even though I really didn't vote for him, our state senator, Bernie Sanders, went and got a program implemented to go to the National Guard people in active duty, and it's supposed to be for the families, too, to call them up and talk to them and see if anybody's having problems readjusting. So I do know Vermont is on, like, the forefront of trying to get troops help.
Is that an organization that is aside from the VA?
It is an organization thing. It was implemented. Congress gave Vermont $1 million for this program, and it got renewed for $3 million. And they hired a team of soldiers that actually have been in related, because vets talk to other vets, and their job is to go to each of the people that has been overseas and to, you know, talk to them to see if they're having problems readjusting. Mm-hmm. The problem is even some of them aren't admitting that they do have problems or, you know,
mm-hmm.
because this disease is a lot like mental illness almost.
Yes.
And you know all the stigmas of mental illness, that there is such a stigma that, oh, well, I am supposed to be strong. I went to war. Nothing got me down. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there is such a stigma that, you know, the guys do not want, and I should say guys and gals, because I'm sure there's women out there as well, that don't want to admit that they have a problem, don't want to admit that, oh, that this is a sign of weakness. And not only that, the men and women in the military also are concerned about their next rank. You know, is this going to affect my next stripe?
Yes.
Is it going to affect my job?
Mm-hmm. Is there help for family members as well up in Vermont with this new program?
They are supposed to be interviewing the families as well.
Mm-hmm.
The help that the families have when the gentlemen are or the soldiers are deployed are for the family members are the family readiness. And they're supposed to be able to go in there at any time and say, okay, I'm having this problem, and they're supposed to be there for their support. As you can imagine, some people take a number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the guys are deployed, there's a lot for them to do. And in their defense, sometimes I don't think it's a defense, because I think if you have to work to midnight to get everything done, you do it. So, yes, there are programs for their wives and families that are left behind so they can go get the help that they need. If family members are in crisis and they know that their people are having or their soldiers are having problems, you know, they can go to the family readiness and tell them, and they're supposed to pass along their names and get the help that they need. And, again, as big as everything is, the VA and all the programs out there, you know, obviously sometimes people do fall through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one thing that the family members and friends need to know, that if you're not getting what you need, scream.
Yeah.
You know, get the help that you need.
Look
for your service more. Member.
Yes, absolutely. You know, so you're obviously very, very knowledgeable in this subject, and I know that you were an organizer of the Vermont Veterans Combat Stress Symposium, which I really want to get to later, a little later in the interview. But, you know, now you've published your memoir, and I'm just really interested in hearing why at this point you've decided to really dedicate your life to this issue of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Because the people that I love are being affected by this. You know, I never thought I would be a champion to go speak out against PTSD or, you know, or try to get help. I'm a military wife. I understand the routine that you're not supposed to step on people's toes sometimes. But I don't care what kind of treatment program it is. If it helps the families and it helps the troops, there should be all treatment offered to everybody. I would lay down my life for the people that I love, and if it means doing what I have to do in order for them to admit that they have a problem and get the help that they need, then I'll do what I have to do.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, okay, Mike was your friend that came back. When did you first discover that Mike had changed after his return from Iraq, and what did that really look like?
Mike came home, and he was totally fine up in Burlington. You know, he came off the airplane.
And what year was this?
This was in 2006.
Okay.
Everybody was grateful. Everybody was home, except for we did lose six members of Task Force Sabre, which was their group that they went in. And one of the things I wrote in the book was that you're grateful for your loved ones coming home and your friends and things, but there's just an emptiness that when the guys do come home, you know, the fallen members that have given up their lives, you know what the ultimate sacrifice that their families have made. Homecoming was fantastic, great. I knew there was a slight problem, but I didn't know it was PTSD because you don't know it's like PTSD until a little bit later on. But he was very tired. When he walked through his apartment door, you could just see his face. And but that's because you know someone over a long time that, you know, you can pick up on stuff. I didn't think too much of it until a few days after he came home. And I called up down there, and he said, I have no strength for anything, relationships, friendships, anything. And I knew right then and there, based on what I had seen, him going through his apartment door, and that we were going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I called the vet center up immediately, and I also flew to Walter Reed, because my brother lives in Maryland, and got as much information as I could.
So what information did you get from that initial interaction with the VA counselors?
Well, give him time. You know, it's going to be readjusting. You understand that. And yes, I mean, we do understand that. Or I should say I understood that being a military wife all those years. I mean, I understood there's always adjustment periods on deployments, you know, getting reacquainted, you know, the whole nine yards. The first call was the vet center, well, go on to the National Post-Traumatic Stress, get up on it, you know, but give him time to readjust. You know, and they said to make sure that I tried, to make sure that I always knew, or that he always knew that we were there, that, you know, if he needed anything, you know, we understood, you know, the whole scenario of that always being there for them.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I got tons of pamphlets from Walter Reed when I flew out there. But I was really lucky because some vets were around there, and I got to talk to them. And one of the soldiers said, do you really want to know what is going on over there? Because he was stationed in Ramadi as well. And I said, you tell me what I need to know so I can get him through this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a conversation. And then I was given my first book, Downrange, by Bridget Carantel and Chuck Dean. But they said that when I read it, I had to read it in chapter at a time because it was so intense.
Too much, yeah.
And it was very, very intense. So, I mean, as we got into his being home, there was more and more problems. Him opening the door from his apartment and saying, oh, I don't want any company right now. You know, I just don't want to be with anybody.
Mm.
And it's just progressed. You know, you have to fight to get them the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they don't want that help?
The stigma, I don't think they want to remember it.
Okay.
One of the books that I've just read, Once a Warrior, Wired for Life, again by Cantrell and Dean, says that the people that they love the closest are the ones that they're going to shut out the first, because if they have lost anybody over there or a thing, it's their mechanism because they don't want to go through any pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to take a chance of losing you. So in respect, they're actually cutting you out and sending you away so they don't lose you. But most people can't handle everything, you know, that they deal out, so they do leave in the end.
Yes, yes. Ugh. So what? Obviously, that's one of the common warning signs of post-traumatic stress disorder. What are some other common signs that you know about?
Common warning signs are they can be overly talkative or keeping to themselves and working with the families and the friends. I would say keeping to themselves is more than talking a lot, because I think they like to try to keep everything to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They have limited range of emotions. They have levels of anger, or they can go straight to, you know, rage. And believe me, I've seen that. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't know the person in front of you.
Do they remember those episodes of rage?
Some of them do, some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
Every individual is different. Every soldier is different. In talking with a lot of soldiers, yes, they do remember. Some of them choose not to remember because they've treated the people that they love so badly or their friends so badly. Other warning signs are hypervigilance, exaggerated startle reaction, big loud noises, ignoring the news, avoiding former friends, and lack of intimacy.
Mm.
They don't want to share anything. They don't want to be with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
What
about addiction?
Substance abuse. Mm-hmm. Some of them, if they had drinking problems to begin with or drug problems, they can, obviously get even worse. Some people turn to the bottle that have never drank before or, didn't have a problem. Personal conversation, they have avoidance. They will pat the answers that you do not understand, even if I told you, I do not want to talk about it. It is something you should not know about. Some of the soldiers have everybody calls it, and for the soldiers, they call it the 1,000-yard stare. And I kind of learned that from the Vietnam vets, that, they just kind of stare. If they're watching TV, they just stare. Sleep disturbances, nightmares, insomnia. They have emotional flooding. Sometimes, and I don't see that this as much, especially with that's more, I think, the wives, that they cry spontaneously. The guys, to some degree, I think, they're guys. They don't want to cry.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that there's varying degrees of all of these symptoms. So, it could be just, exhibiting a few of these or all of
them. It doesn't have to be that they have all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like there's physical symptoms, but they don't have to have all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Headaches, fatigue, pain. And there's no explanation for pain. There's a lot of physical aspects to this, too, that the mental part can also cause the physical parts, too.
Oh, that's a good point. So tell me about combat stress. Is that considered the same as PTSD, or are they two different disorders?
Everybody calls PTSD. It's also known as shell shock. It's got tons of names, but combat stress is PTSD. It's just got all different kinds of names. Each war had something different, battle fatigue. And some soldiers have combat stress because there's stress in war. When they're over there fighting for their nation and their country, and they have to make life and death decisions, the people that they have under them or over them or, depending on what rank they are, they are under stress. And to say that everybody doesn't come home with a certain amount of stress or combat stress, I would think would be a real, understatement to our soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I think some of them can handle stuff a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, PTSD in their research has shown it depends on what kind of family life you have been brought up in.
Well, that just makes me wonder. I was just going to ask you that, if there's a way they can look at, pre-combat, whether these individuals had the coping skills or were, sort of had that in their family that would set them up to better handle an extremely stressful situation like this.
I would think that they would be able to, but what they do, I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's different because if you're in a war situation, if you do lose family, and you might as well say family even though they're their buddies, they have to protect each other over there.
Mm-hmm.
So if they are losing their buddies who are family members, basically, we all go through the grieving thing. When I lost my mother and my father, each one of them I grieved differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that also has to play, is if they're losing people that they love over there and their comrades, how is that going to affect them? And I do know that the Army and the Air Force has a little bit different just from personal talking to people,
mm-hmm.
The soldiers in the Army, it's like their commands over there says, oh, well, don't tell your families anything, you know, because it'll only upset them.
Mm.
When my son was over in Iraq at Camp Buka, I know that they got bombed one time or mortared upon or whatever you want to call it over there. And one of the things that the Air Force said is make sure you tell your families. Make sure you share what you're feeling with your family so they can help you if you need any help.
Oh, is that that's very interesting.
And I think it's different from, and I know that some of the Army commands have come a long way because a lot of them have, at least up in Vermont, have written letters that, listen, if you're having problems, go get help. You're not, you know, your job is not in jeopardy. Go get the help you need to try to take away that stigma. But it seems like the Air Force is a little bit farther along with that, that they're actually telling their soldiers to go get what they need.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you an author looking for another way to make your book available to your reading audience? If so, how about entering the revolutionary world of ebooks for Amazon Kindle? By providing not only the ebook reader limitless possibilities, but it also now provides the opportunity for all authors to have their book available in the ebook format. The Kindle can hold 200 books, hundreds more on a memory card, and has a limitless amount through Amazon. Let ReaderViews help you get your book on Amazon in just a few easy steps. You provide us the information and we'll upload it for you. At the same time, we will optimize your ebook by ensuring that your book is compatible and looks great on the new Kindle Reader. For more information, please go to readerviews.com and click on the services for authors in the top menu bar. There you will see the services we provide as well as the link for your Kindle ebook production. The success of your book is our greatest interest. Go to readerviews.com today.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
Did your son, is he exhibiting any symptoms of combat stress?
No.
No? What about your husband?
No, my husband, he came home and he resumed his life like nothing ever happened.
Mm.
You know, he just walked right back in. He was full-time active duty, which I think is also a little bit different than when you're active duty in National Guard, that you're more prepped. That's the only word I can think of, is when you're active duty, that's your training. You need to be focused on, you know, what you're going to do. With the National Guard, they train one weekend a month in their two-week summer camp, and all these National Guard people are being called up, and they have, depending on how much time, 3 months to 6 months to train up to go to Iraq or Afghanistan, and then they spend a year on the ground over there.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, you know, difference. And just like for families, because I've lived both on post and National Guard, on post, and if your family is on post active duty, you know, everything is like a little community. You have more of a support network than you do for the National Guard because the National Guard, it's across the state. I mean, Task Force Sabre had all these men, and they were from everywhere, Burlington, Brattleboro, Rutland, you know, everywhere in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they hired retired people to come in and try to help take care of the families at the armories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different climate that, you know, National Guard people have to go through
than the general military.
To the active duty.
Yes, yes. So I have a question about what I've heard considered the honeymoon period after soldiers return. You know, we kind of touched on that. Can you talk a little more towards that and how long that honeymoon period can actually go on? Because it sounds like your friend Mike, it was a couple of days before, and then, you know, all the symptoms started showing up. But I've heard that actually people can go for much longer before they start exhibiting symptoms.
Exactly. I mean, it's different for every soldier, and that's what everybody has to know. Some of them can take as long as 6 months to a year. to come, that, oh, everything's fine, you know, they're marching on with their lives and life is good, and then they start having problems. So there's no set time that this can transpire.
Mm-hmm.
Normally they say if you're going to have a problem, it's going to be within the first year.
Okay.
But that's not carved in stone, and I don't think it should be carved in stone, because if a soldier is starting to have problems 18 months down the line, you know, that can be.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I've heard about traumatic brain injury, and I'm wondering how that plays into post-traumatic stress disorder and what the difference is, what that term actually means.
Traumatic brain injury, actually, they just had a big seminar, and one of the things is that they were showing the slides for post-traumatic stress disorder and slides for traumatic brain injury. And one of the things is a lot of the symptoms are the same. The difference between traumatic brain injury is if you've been hurt, had a concussion, a blast from an IED, they don't necessarily have to be out and, you know, hurt and on the ground or whatever. But sometimes the soldiers have a back blast or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and that can cause some problems and injury with them.
So that's actually something that they can maybe see on an MRI or that type of thing?
Well, see, TBI is not my, you know, strong suit, except for the thing that they were saying. The problem that some of the VA is having right now is diagnosing TBI or PTSD, because these soldiers with the IEDs and everything have had these blasts,
mm-hmm.
and so what they're trying, because obviously the treatment for TBI is different from PTSD, because PTSD, the VA theory, they have their treatments down there, and they have to treat TBI if they do have traumatic brain injury first, because it's a physical thing,
mm-hmm.
opposed to the post-traumatic.
Do you know if TBI gets better if it's left alone, or is there a treatment protocol that they have to go through?
They have a treatment protocol, and everything that I have understood about it, but I don't have a PhD in my name or an MD,
mm-hmm.
is that it does not better. It will only get worse.
Okay.
But that is what I've been told by all the PhD people and, you know, the MDs. And, you know, I actually have a folder just on TBI.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, why do you think it is about this war, about the Iraq war, that TBI and post-traumatic stress disorder have really become the signature wounds of this war for the soldiers coming back? And do you think that, you know, the general public, do you think that they really have any idea at the severity of this and what's really going on to cause these deep wounds in these soldiers?
Some of it has to do with the fighting of the war, the IEDs,
mm-hmm.
The bombs. Obviously, my understanding, and again, I'm not a soldier, but from what soldiers have told me, it's, you know, the ground war that, you know, everybody is, you know, fighting, and just like what Vietnam was, you know, in the bushes, you know, going to house,
mm-hmm.
not knowing who your enemy is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they when they search the houses, sometimes they don't know who the enemy is and who isn't the enemy.
Mm.
I do know that the reason that a lot of people think that there's more traumatic brain injuries than happening is actually technology. I mean, back in Vietnam, some of the injuries that the troops are having wouldn't have been survivable back then.
Okay.
And so when they go through the Landstuhl Air Force Base or over in Germany and everything, you know, a lot of the casualties are surviving because the mortality rates are down from Vietnam War to here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we've lost all these service members. And I think what the American people have to realize is, I mean, not that every life isn't precious, every soldier isn't precious, but look at the statistics. I mean, all the technology now, it keeps the soldiers alive.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that with the polarity, say, of the American people or even globally at what different countries are saying about this war, do you think that that has any effect or can cause that trauma to increase in these soldiers that are over there and they may not feel completely supported in what they're doing?
I think I think soldiers feel supported by, you know, the American people in the sense that I really have seen it because I didn't know that much about Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is the 131 is one of the companies here in the state of Vermont. They went to Vietnam, they went to Operation Desert Storm, and they went to Iraqi Freedom.
Mm.
All three wars they've been in. And one of the things is when my husband took over the job as training NCO at the 131, is they never got a homecoming.
Mm.
And one of the harebrained idea, blonde moments I had was giving, you know, the Vietnam War the recognition that they did.
Mm.
And Mike was the commander, and like I said, my husband was the training NCO, and we put together, you know, this whole dinner, and I know the Vietnam guys came, and they were crying at this dinner, and they were all happy that someone actually finally recognized them, even though it had been 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was really cool because I knew nothing about the Vietnam War.
Interesting.
You know, except for the fact that, you know, my husband's father had been in it and everything.
Yes.
And,
yes,
you know, from what he had said, which he doesn't talk that much about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when the guys came home from Operation Desert Storm, everybody made sure that they came out to welcome them home. And that's the same thing that goes on now, is the American people may, you know, you can agree or disagree about this war, but when the troops come home, the flags are flying for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people are out there,
yes,
you know, supporting them. So I don't think that, you know, they may feel, you know, or some of them may have their own opinions, but I don't think the reflection is there. It was kind of comical. Battle Mind, one of the Travis Jones was talking at one of these functions, and we were sitting there talking, and, you know, you see war protesters on the war, and one of the gentlemen or soldiers had PTSD, and one of the things is he was having problems readjusting, and he went and he was going to tell off the the war protesters.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I know I gave them the right to do that, but I just wanted them to know my opinion on it."
Okay.
And true, I mean, the people that are protesting the war, they just have to realize that when they're protesting the war, they have to think of the service members over there that are giving their ultimate sacrifice, their lives, to give them that expression of freedom.
Mm. Do you have any idea what percentage of soldiers coming back are being diagnosed with PTSD?
It's being updated every time I turn around.
I'm sure.
The latest, there was a newspaper article that said 20% of them were being diagnosed with PTSD.
Mm.
Another one had it higher. Another one had it lower.
Mm.
RVA Hospital said, well, according to their records, only 8% was being treated for the Iraq PTSD. There was 100%, but 92% were different people.
Mm.
So statistically speaking, it's different, but people are saying that at least half of them are going to come back with some kind of symptoms of PTSD.
Mm-hmm. I imagine so. So getting back to your book, Giving My Heart, tell me why you really wanted to tell your story, your particular story.
The people that I was working with, I did the symposium, and everyone said, Lisa, everybody listens to you. You've got to tell them. You've got to, you know, speak out against this or kind of, you know, be our advocate for this. And I kind of poo-pooed everybody for a long, long time. And then one day I sat down and I said, okay, why I'm going to write this book. And I did it in 24 hours, believe it or not.
Is that right?
And, I mean, it took me another 2 days because I hand wrote it. I, you know, didn't do it on a typewriter.
Oh, my God.
But I sat on my couch in my living room, tears coming down my face, and I wrote this book, and then I typed it, which I was cursing the whole time. And then it got, you know, everybody read it, and everybody said, you got to do this.
Mm.
And I was sitting on, no, nobody's interested. But anyway, that's how the story took place or the book got written. So,
well, people are obviously interested in this book, you know. So the symposium you're talking about, is that the Vermont Veterans Combat Stress Symposium?
That's correct.
So when was this? And tell us about your involvement with it.
Well, it happened March 3rd,
mm-hmm.
and obviously the person I wanted to help didn't show up.
That was 2007, March?
That's correct.
Okay.
Actually, how it got started was, obviously, I was dealing with Mike and his post-traumatic stress disorder or his mood disorder, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
and my son had just came from Korea, and he was going to be landing on Japan because that was his duty choice, because if you spend a year in Korea, you get to go anywhere you want afterwards. But what we didn't know, or rumor had it, that because all the guys were trained up in Korea, when he got to Japan, the probability of him going to Iraq was pretty high.
Mm.
So we flew over to see him in November because we knew his orders were coming for January. And so anyway, we wanted to spend a week with him. So we flew over to Japan, and the military over there has the Pentagon Channel and the Armed Forces Network. And so I was watching TV, and they had a whole one-hour program on post-traumatic stress disorder. And if I didn't know that he didn't have it before, I knew it afterwards,
mm.
that this is what I was definitely dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the authors or people that were on there was David Powell. And
yes.
he wrote a book, and I said, damn, I said, you know, I got to read that book.
Mm-hmm. Great book.
So anyway, I came home, I ordered the book, and I cried the whole time I was reading it because it was like, oh, my God, you know, we got to do something, or I've got to do something. And one of the things is I didn't want the members of Task Force Saber or anyone in the Vermont Army National Guard going 20 years with post-traumatic stress disorder and having problems and not getting the help that they need. So anyway, I got the book. I ordered the book from Mike, sent it down to his apartment, and then anyway, I looked in the book, and I looked on the website, and I called Victor up, and I said, "Does David ever do anything publicly?"
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it all got started.
Okay.
Travis Jones from the Vet Center down at White River Junction came. We broke it up into three parts. One was David speaking. The other one was the presentation of Battle Mind,
mm-hmm.
Which the Army puts out, and Travis gave a fantastic speech. And anyone that can get the video, because I know you can order it, or you can actually go on the web also and see it, because it gives you four examples.
Mm.
Of, you know, different scenarios.
Is this going to be a yearly symposium?
I don't know. They asked me if I would do it again this year, and I haven't said yes or no.
Okay. Well, we'll stay tuned for that, Lisa. So let's mention your website real quick here. I'm actually looking at the time, and we are just running down to the end of our show today, so I want to make sure we get that included.
Okay, it's www.vermontveterans.com.
Okay.
and you go on to the website and you have links to everything.
Okay. And what about your book's website? Don't you have givingmyheart.com as
well? Actually, I'm not sure about that. I think I do because
okay.
Victor set it up, but I haven't been on there. So.
Okay, great. Well, I know your book can be purchased through local and online booksellers and probably as well at vermontveterans.com.
Through there.
Okay, great. Well, it is definitely out
there. And the only other thing I'd like to say about the book
mm-hmm.
is all the proceeds, it's going back to Vermont Vet to Vet, which is a program of Vietnam veterans started up here because they have counseling sessions for the guys here,
oh.
and they have support groups. And so anyway, all the money that for the book go there.
Great to know. I did not know that. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Lisa, it's been so wonderful talking with you today. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and telling us more about your book and your mission to get post-traumatic stress out there into the public eye. And we just really, really commend the work that you're doing. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. All right, listeners, there you go. Great, great interview with Lisa Farber-Silk, her new book, Giving My Heart, Love in a Military Family, which is out now on Loving Healing Press, can be purchased through online and I believe local booksellers as well. If they don't have it on the shelf, they can certainly order it. The website VermontVeterans.com as well as GivingMyHeart.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live today. Once again, I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.
Blog Talk Radio.